Okay, my name is Venerable Kassapa. I am just a little junior monk from Vajrayana Monastery, and I've been asked to give the talk today. So you get something different. So I thought, I'm a little bit tired today, so I thought we'd break up the talk with a few just very brief meditations. I remember Bhante Sujato and Ajahn Brahmali did a course here about Buddhism, and I found it very useful. I wasn't a monk then, and I found it very useful just to relax for a minute or two between the talks to help kind of settle down, because usually we come from world and busyness and then straight into it and we have all of these thoughts in our minds and stuff. So if you just start by just relaxing. If you don't wish to meditate, then you can just sit in quietness, which is meditation anyway. So so just find a comfortable position. We're not here to torture ourselves, so just relax and try and find some inner centering. Relax the legs. Relax the waist. Relax onto the seat. Relax the belly, softening. The chest and lungs. The shoulders. Relax from the base of the spine up into the shoulders. Relax the hands, wrists, elbows, upper arms, and shoulders. Release the legs, release the waist, release the belly, the back, chest, shoulders, arms and hands. Relax the neck and face, the eyes. Relax the entire head. As if the body is going to sleep and the mind is waking up. Whatever has happened in the past, it's finished with, it's gone, never coming back. Future is uncertain. Even our thoughts about the present, we can put them down. Just aware of the breath as it's coming in and going out. The softness. And when you're ready, open your eyes. Okay, so once again, I am Venerable Kassapa. My Upajaya, so the one who has ordained me, is Ajahn Brahm. And I'll just start with the Namo Tassa, actually. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasa buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So, as I was saying, my teacher is Ajahn Brahm, and in Buddhism, when we ordain, our teacher becomes like our father. So we look after, he looks after me, and then my job is to try and be a good son. So part of my practice is, if I'm asked to help with things, I'm happy to help. So we have a collection of suttas today, and we'll just see how far we get with it. So just offering some thankfulness and gratefulness to the monks at my monastery, and just a sense of humbleness being here today. Okay, so the next slide. How do we do this? Ah, you're there already. Okay, so we have, if you're not sure, in Buddhism we have the Majjhima Nikaya, which is the middle length discourses, the numerical discourses, the connected discourses, and the long discourses. And they're the main teachings of the Buddha. And Wisdom Publication, Bhikkhu Bodhi, does the translation we use at the moment. And also Sutta Central, which is Bhante Sajjato website. His translations will be there soon. So they're the main teachings. And then on top of that, there's another book with the called the Kundaka Nikaya, which has like the Dhammapada and some other books in it. And then on top of that, we have the called the Vinaya, which is like the monks and the nuns training. And so together they're like all the core teachings of the Buddha, and then there's some other books after that as well. So, but what does this mean? Well, it means if we were just to read these texts again and again, then, you know, that wouldn't really lead us to practicing. So what we do is we come and we hear the Dhamma and we find what's useful to us, and then we put it into practice. And then the more that we find teachings that suit us, then the more we can go deeper with that. So we'll just go to the first sutta now, which is Majjhima Nikaya 35. So starting with Buddha Nisati, we have, the Blessed One is enlightened and teaches the Dhamma for the sake of enlightenment. The Blessed One is tamed and teaches the Dhamma for the sake of taming oneself. The Blessed One is at peace, and he teaches the Dhamma for the sake of peace. The Blessed One has crossed over and teaches the Dhamma for the sake of crossing over. The Blessed One has attained Nibbana, and he teaches the Dhamma for attaining Nibbana. So these recollections in Buddhism, the Buddha taught us that in order to gain access to the path, that having faith in the Buddha's enlightenment, that's a part of it. So having recollections like this is very powerful. It's called Buddha Nisati, where we recollect again and again the qualities of the Buddha, and the more that deepens our inspiration in our heart, then the more gives us a willingness to want to practice. So, you know, for the sake of peace, for the sake of crossing over, and for attaining Nibbana, which is like the extinguishment of greed, hatred, and delusion. And then we'll go to the next one. And another short one at Majjhima Nikaya 70, we have bhikkhus, for a faithful disciple, who is intent on fathoming the teacher's dispensation, it is proper that he conducts himself thus. The Blessed One is the teacher. I am a disciple. The Blessed One knows. I do not know. Again, the Blessed One is the teacher. I am a disciple. The Blessed One knows. I do not know. So I think in the West, this is a difficult thing for us, because this is where our doubts come into the practice. You know, why are we practicing? Do we believe in the Buddha's teachings? Are they real? And then that sense that we're giving up a part of ourselves by believing wholeheartedly in something. So as Ajahn Brahmali points out, it's not like blind faith where we just believe in the Buddha, but it's like we go, okay, we have trust that this might be true, and then we practice accordingly. And so that's the kind of admitting that we don't know, and we have to put our faith in the Buddha in order to get the willingness to want to practice to overcome suffering. And then at Majjhima Nikaya 8, we have the Buddha speaking. Chunda, that one who is sinking in the mud should pull out another who is sinking in the mud is impossible. Who is not himself sinking in the mud should pull out another who is sinking in the mud is possible. The one who is himself untamed, undisciplined, unextinguished should tame another, discipline him, and help extinguish his defilements is impossible. The one who is himself tamed, disciplined, with defilements extinguished, should tame another, discipline him, and help extinguish his defilements is possible. So this is the idea that in order to get out of the mud, that we need, well, the Buddha points out for noble disciples to follow the teachings of the Buddha, and those pointing to a Buddha. And then when the Buddha arises in the world, then those after that time are all who become enlightened are following after in the wake of the Buddha. So anybody who is out of the mud, so who has attained nibbana, who is an arahant, or those pointing to those teachings, then they're the things that are there that are worth following and putting into practice. And so we have the next one, which is the middle length discourse is 9. And so now we start on right view. This sutra is very long, and there's many different ways when Sariputta was questioned by these monks of understanding right view. But I think the point is that we just have to, that they're pointing to us with the Dhamma, we just have to choose something that resonates with us and then practice that. And so this is the first one of that sutta. So we'll just take a look at that today. There the Venerable Sariputta addressed the bhikkhus thus, "Friends, bhikkhus." "Friend," they replied. The Venerable Sariputta said this, "One of right view, one of right view." He said, "Friends, In what way is a noble disciple one of right view, whose view is straight, who has unwavering confidence in the Dhamma, and has arrived at this true Dhamma? And of course, Dhamma is like the way things are in Buddhism. The Buddha said it's like the handful of leaves. So if the world and everything, the knowledge, is like a forest of leaves, then the teachings that the Buddha pointed to that are relevant to ending suffering are only one handful of leaves of the whole forest. So when we're speaking about the Dhamma, we're just speaking about those truths that lead to the end of suffering, or the natural way of things, the balance of cause and effect. Indeed, friend, we would come from far away to learn from the good venerable Sariputta the meaning of the statement. It would be good if the venerable Sariputta would explain the meaning of the statement. Having heard it from him, the bhikkhus will remember it. Then, friends, listen and attend closely to what I shall say. Yes, friend, the bhikkhus replied. The venerable Sariputta said this: when, friends, a noble disciple understands the unwholesome and the root of the unwholesome, the wholesome and the root of the wholesome, in that way he is one of right view, whose view is straight, who has unwavering confidence in the Dhamma, and has arrived at this true Dhamma. And in what, friends, is the unwholesome? What is the root of the unwholesome? What is the root? What is the wholesome, and what is the root of the wholesome? Killing living beings is unwholesome. Taking what is not given is unwholesome. Misconduct in sensual pleasures is unwholesome. False speech is unwholesome. Malicious speech is unwholesome. Harsh speech is unwholesome. Gossip is unwholesome. Covetedness, which is like greedy desires, is unwholesome. Ill will, which is like anger and hatefulness and aversion, is unwholesome. Wrong view, or wrong perspectives, is unwholesome. This is called the unwholesome. And what is the root of the unwholesome? Greed is a root of the unwholesome. Hate is a root of the unwholesome. And delusion is a root of the unwholesome. These are the root of the unwholesome. So we often hear greed, hatred, and delusion in Buddhism. And so in this sutta, it's showing that, you know, the usual way of things, it's like a tree growing, and under the ground from the tree, just by natural default, when we have greed, hatred, and delusion in control, then these unwholesome actions will just naturally occur, because that's the field. That's the seeds, so that's what will grow. So it's like a relationship there. When we plant certain seeds in a field, then certain trees will grow. And so the Buddha is teaching us that it's because of this greed, hatred, and delusion that these unwholesome actions arise in our minds. And what is the wholesome? Abstention from killing living beings is wholesome. So basically trying not to do it, giving it up, abandoning it. Abstention from taking what is not given is wholesome. So not stealing. Abstention from misconduct in sensual pleasures is wholesome. Abstention from false speech is wholesome. Abstention from malicious speech is wholesome. Abstention from harsh speech is wholesome. Abstention from gossip is wholesome. Uncovetedness is wholesome. Non-ill will is wholesome. And right view is wholesome. This is called the wholesome. What is the root of the wholesome? Non-greed is a root of the wholesome. Non-hate is a root of the wholesome. Non-delusion is a root of the wholesome. This is called the root of the wholesome. So I think it's important as well to understand, to get these things in our heart. The Buddha has one teaching that to kind of repeatedly go over the teachings and then to get our own understanding. Like particularly when we read something like this, it might not be vocabulary that we're used to. So, but if we get out of thesaurus and we talk to our other spiritual friends, we can come up with an understanding that makes sense to us with you know, our own inner world. And then we can take these teachings and actually kind of bring them into our own heart. Because sometimes, you know, like what is non-hate and what is non-greed and these things. So I think it takes time to actually come to an understanding of these things slowly. Okay. When a noble disciple has thus understood the unwholesome and the root of the unwholesome, the wholesome and the root of the wholesome, he entirely abandons the underlying tendency to lust. He abolishes the underlying tendency to aversion. He eradicates, because I didn't know the previous word, he eradicates the underlying tendency to the view and conceit I am. And by abandoning ignorance and arousing true knowledge, he here and now makes an end of suffering. In that way, too, a noble disciple is one of right view, whose view is straight, who has unwavering confidence of the Dhamma, and has arrived at this true Dhamma. And this is just one little part of that sutta, and but I think, you know, that's plenty. So we're going to just stick with what is wholesome and unwholesome for today's talk. Is there any questions? Anything? Am I speaking too fast or anything? Oh, good.
With the part where he's talking about one who is in the mud cannot pull,
yes.
Another one who is within the mud.
Yes.
So my question is, then what value is the Sangha? Like when we're working things out together, because we're deluded.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering what the distinction is between the two.
The distinction in Buddhism is that we have to do the practice for ourselves. So all we can do is rely upon our own wisdom and make our own hearts like a vessel for the Dhamma. And then trusting upon our own understanding. For example, the sutta that I was mentioning, there is one teaching where one goes to, say, a monk or a nun, and then you question them about their virtue, question them about these 10 wholesome courses of action, ask them about what is wholesome and unwholesome. So you actually use your own wisdom and judgment to then go, well, actually, the actions that this person is doing and the things that they are saying align with my understanding of Dhamma, so maybe, you know, maybe they have an understanding, and maybe, you know, this aligns with what I think the Buddha has taught, so it's useful to follow those actions. So you have to use like trust and our own inner wisdom to kind of set the right course. And then that's why in Buddhism it's like pachitang, which is like experience for ourselves. So we can't do the practice for other people. And another beautiful one, Ajahn Chah reversed a quote of the Dhammapada, and he also said, you know, to be like a bee taking the nectar from a flower. So we learn to take what is good from the teachers and the things around us and use that in our experience without damaging the petals and the flowers. So we learn to actually use whatever situations we're in to become our teachers. You know, we can see the wholesome, we can see the unwholesome, and we can grow from that. And then slowly we aspire to finding those teachings that are going to lead us out of suffering. And then hopefully that leads to those doors opening in that direction.
Thank you. I just have, just from that, I just want to move on to one other question, which is then if we've practiced the Dharma and we've learnt teachings, if people come to us with questions, what is the correct course of action with sharing what we believe is the teachings?
Well, it's good to always defer back to teachings that you think are true. You can give your understanding, but then you kind of separate and go, well, you know, I may not have sufficient wisdom, so, you know, take what I say with a grain of salt, but, you know, you're trying to help. But certainly some teachers recommend being at a certain level before you, say, teach meditation practice and things like that to people, because you may just lead people completely in the wrong direction and cause them more harm than good. But I think if you're generally coming from faith and inspiration and wanting people to grow, then it's more like Kalyanamitta. You're like pointing to the Buddha and enlightened beings and to the Dhamma. And that's, you know, sharing the Dhamma is important. It's inspirational. And coming together and talking about these things, it should be done.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah. Verbal Kasapa.
Yes.
You know, some of these phrases, you know, they're a bit harsh, I find, you know. You know? Like, it seems like it's like a thou shall not, you know. So in the Buddha's teaching, we should approach it to the best of our ability, isn't it? As for example, like you see, like no killing, okay? How about, like, say for white ants, is okay, you have to do it, isn't it? Okay, now. For example, okay, so you have to, a white ant attacks your house, all right? So what do? You have to get rid of the white ant. You see, man? So it is to the best of our ability in certain circumstances, duty, certain things, we have to be flexible.
Yeah, we'll leave that for the moment, Eddie, because yeah. We're going to be going on about wholesome and unwholesome for a while. But thank you for the question. So maybe at the end, if you still have a question about that. But yeah, definitely, I mean, this is a path of practice, and it's just really learning cause and effect inside our own hearts. And so the Buddha didn't want us to blindly believe these things, but to look, you know, at what's going on in our own inner climate and find the causes for these things and make changes to our perceptions. So, all right, continue on. Okay, so then we have, if you want to read up further on this, we have in the Numerical Discourses, chapter 10, verse 176, there is a detailed explanation of these wholesome courses of action, and sorry, of what we've just been talking about, and the Buddha gives a bit more. So I've just put a little excerpt in here of one part, and we'll just look at the mental actions. So we have, there is the case where a certain person is not covetous. He does not covet the belongings of others, thinking, oh, that what belongs to others would be mine. And he bears no ill will and is not corrupt in the resolves of his heart. He thinks, may these beings be free from animosity, free from oppression, free from trouble, and may they look after themselves with ease. So, it's a very nice sutta, and I would suggest reading that one up. And if you want to know more about what the Buddha said specifically about these courses of action.
Bears no ill will and is not corrupt in the resolves of his heart. What does that mean? He bears no ill will.
I think that just means like the intention coming from where one's coming from. So quite often when we're coming from selfish desires rather than selfless desires, when we haven't investigated when irritation arises, it's our first response, but irritation is rooted in ill will. And usually the irritation, it's rooted in things where we're just thinking about ourselves, where we're stuck in our own little world trying to fight everything around us. But if our heart was coming from a more open place and our attention was pure, then that irritation wouldn't be there. So I think it's just more where our center is coming from. And the more we kind of give up our old patterns, then it's not that kind of old selfish pattern. That's just my opinion. But okay. Yes. Okay, and then seeing as we're focusing on right view today, and then we have he has right view and is not warped in the way he sees things. Of course, when it says he, it means she as well. It's just was spoken to bhikkhus. There is what is given, what is offered, what is sacrificed. There are fruits and results of good and bad actions. There is this world and the next world. There is mother and father. There are spontaneously reborn beings. There are Brahmins and contemplatives who, faring rightly and practicing rightly, proclaim this world and the next after having directly known and realized it for themselves. This is how one is made pure in the three ways by mental action. So, realized it for themselves. This is really the point of the Buddha's teachings. And so when we have the Eightfold Path, it starts with right view. And one of the right views is this 10 wholesome courses of action, which ends in right view. So it's like there is one simile to do with the Eightfold Path where it's like charioteers, and for each of the section, like one goes to one section and then the next to number two and the next to number three and the next to number four, and you get to the end and then you come back to the beginning. So it's just this process of deepening the path more and more, walking backwards and forwards, all of the factors of the Eightfold Path, until this right view is perfected. And you know, it doesn't happen overnight, so it's a bit of a process. But it's definitely worth reflecting on what is right view and what is the path. Okay. So we just have another pause for a moment. As I mentioned, I'm a little bit tired. So just for a moment, thank you. And just relax the body, be at ease. And if you meditate, just meditate for a moment, or just a bit of quietness. Okay, now we're relaxed and refocused. Continuing on, in the rains, I sometimes have the habit of randomly picking up a book and flicking to a page, and I came across this book called Blooming in the Desert, which is a translation of some of the teachings of a sayadaw called the Wildflower Monk, Tung Pulu. Not very good with pronunciation. Anyway, as it's on this very topic, I thought it would be relevant. Sometimes hearing the same teachings in different ways, you know, allows us to understand it better. So we have, in Buddhist ethics, there are 10 unwholesome conducts. 3 of these unwholesome conducts proceed from our body door and cannot be done with our speech or our thoughts. There are 4 conducts associated with our speech door. These 4 cannot be performed either with our bodily actions nor with our thoughts. If we analyze the mind door, we find 3 unwholesome conducts we perform with our mind. And these 10 unwholesome conducts are killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, These are the three unwholesome conducts of the Bodhidharma: lying, slander, rude speech, and foolish talk. These are the four unwholesome conducts of the speech door: envy, hatred, wrong view. These are the three unwholesome conducts of the mind door. Because of these 10 unwholesome, we get unwholesome results. As you sow, so shall you reap. So if you steal, kill, have envy, and so on, you will experience the suffering you have caused others. So yeah, this is... Also notice when you hear translations and people's teachings, sometimes the words and the translations are slightly different to the Buddha's teachings. So it's always good to have the suttas and those things as the base, and then kind of branch out a little bit to get a deeper understanding. And sometimes we just have to use our own wisdom to think if it's relevant or not. But I just thought this was particularly relevant for today's. We just do a little bit more of this one. So there are also the opposite conducts which are wholesome. For example, charity, keeping good moral discipline, doing meditation, having right views about things, right concentration or right meditation or samadhi, right mindfulness. We group these conducts into three sections: dana, sila, and bhavana. So dana is the generosity, sila is the virtue, and bhavana is the cultivation of mind. As there are unwholesome results, so also performing... As there are unwholesome results, so also performing meritorious deeds, having a self-sacrificing nature, having goodwill towards others, and doing a lot of meditation practice, these are the wholesome conducts, and they will also give good results because of the good, wholesome thoughts, words, and deeds. The results will also be wholesome. So, yeah, it's just really a process of learning our thoughts, words, and deeds in our daily life. These things are always with us, and just seeing what is wholesome and what is unwholesome, that's really what the Buddha's talking about. And I particularly like that because, you know, he brings in the dana, sila, and bhavana, which is another way of looking at it, but starting with a generous heart and then practicing the virtue and cultivating the mind, you know, these things all go together. And when we make this, when one makes this a focus, and then it's easier for these things to come together, to become like natural. So then, speaking about thankfulness, we have one little sutta. Bhikkhus, this is Numerical Discourses, chapter 2, verse 32. Bhikkhus, I will teach you the plane of the bad person and the plane of the good person. Listen and attend closely. I will speak. Yes, Bhante, those bhikkhus replied. The Blessed One said this: and what is the plane of a bad person? A bad person is ungrateful and unthankful, for ingratitude and unthankfulness are extolled, which is commended, praised by the bad. So ingratitude, unthankfulness belonging entirely to the plane of the bad person. And what is the plane of the good person? A good person is grateful and thankful, for gratitude and thankfulness are extolled by the good. Gratitude and thankfulness belonging entirely to the plane of the good person. So this just shows that the Buddha's teaching us a path to be a good person and how not to be a bad person. And so now just jumping back into history, we have Ashoka. So King Ashoka was the king which caused Buddhism to spread much further than it may have spread otherwise. And what remains of King Ashoka today is these stone rock edicts. It's quite interesting because there's some translations of these stone rock edicts, and so we get a glimpse in history of what some thousands of years ago, after the time of the Buddha, how they were inspired by the Dhamma and what was being said. So we're just going to have a brief look at that. Therefore, this is writ all from the edicts. Therefore, your aim should be to act with impartiality. It is because of these things, envy, anger, cruelty, hate, indifference, laziness or tiredness, that such a thing does not happen. Therefore, your aim should be, may these things not be in me, and the root of this is non-anger and patience. And then on the next one, so these ones are taken from a translation by Venerable Dhammika. People see only their good deeds, saying, I have done this good deed, but they do not see their evil deeds, saying, I have done this evil deed, or this is called evil. But this tendency is difficult to see. One should think like this. It is these things that lead to evil, to violence, to cruelty, anger, pride, and jealousy. Let me not ruin myself with these things. And further, one should think, this leads to happiness in this world and the next. Now the people in India who have not associated with the gods do so. This is the result of zeal, and it is not just the great who can do this. Even the humble, if they are zealous, can attain heaven. And this proclamation has been made with this aim. Let both humble and great be zealous. Let even those on the borders know, and let zeal last long. This message has been proclaimed 256 times by the king while on tour. And on the next one, it is now more than 2.5 years since I became a lay disciple. But until now, I have not been very zealous. But now that I have visited the Sangha for more than a year, I have become very zealous. Now the people in India, which is ancient India, who have not associated with the gods do so. This is the result of zeal, and it is not just the great who can do this. Even the humble, if they are zealous, can attain heaven. Father and mother should be respected, and so should elders. Kindness to living beings should be made strong, and the truth should be spoken. In these ways, the Dharma should be promoted. Likewise, a teacher should be honored by his pupil, and his manners should be shown towards relations. This is an ancient rule that conduces to long life. Thus should one act. So, here we are some thousands of years later, and we're talking about the exact same things that they were talking about then. So this human experience is we think in the modern world that we're somehow removed from the past, but you can see that the things that they're focusing on are exactly these same things that we have in our own lives now. And it's quite inspiring to see those teachings written so clearly, just as it is in the Buddhist teachings, and you know, as we still find when we talk about Dharma with our friends. So I will just skip this pause and go on. We only have a little bit of time left. So this story, just because we're talking about respect, because I think it's very important, the gratefulness and the thankfulness is a basis with the generosity to understanding these wholesome courses of action. There's a story in the Monk's Rules, in the section on lodging, chapter 16.6 of the Chulawaga. And I'll just quickly go through it. Now, at the time, monks who were pupils of the group of six monks, having gone along in the front of the order of monks with the awakened one at its head, took possession of dwelling places. They took possession of sleeping places, saying, "This will be for our preceptors. This will be for our teachers. This will be for us." Then the Venerable Sariputta, having gone along close behind the order of monks, with the awakened one at its head, not being able to get a sleeping place, the dwelling places being taken possession of, the sleeping places being taken possession of. So basically, Sariputta sat down at the root of a tree, and then the Lord, which is the Buddha, getting up during the night towards the morning, coughed. The Venerable Sariputta also coughed. And the Buddha said, "Who is there?" "It is I, Lord," Sariputta. "Why are you, Sariputta, sitting here?" Then the Venerable Sariputta told this matter to the Lord, as we said earlier. And then the Buddha goes and speaks to these monks and basically says, you know, ask them if it's true, and then goes through, admonishes them, saying, "How, monks, can these foolish men, having gone along in front of us..." "It is not, monks, for pleasing those who are not yet pleased." So basically, he rebukes them. So here's Sariputta out in the cold while all the monks are in their huts. And Sariputta is, you know, one of the foremost disciples of the Buddha. And we'll just skip forward. Then the Lord addressed the monks, saying, "Formerly, monks, there used to be a large bayan on a slope of the Himalayas. Three friends lived near there. It was a partridge, a monkey, and a bull elephant. These lived courteous, deferential, polite to one another." And then it goes on to they work out their age and who is the most senior. And then it says a few pages on, then monks, the monkey and the bull elephant spoke thus to the partridge, "You, friend, are the oldest of us by birth. We will respect, revere, reverence, and honor you. and we will abide by your advice. Then monks, the partridge caused the monkey and the bull elephant to undertake the 5 moral habits, and himself followed the observances of the 5 moral habits. So this is the 5 precepts. They, having lived courteous, deferential, polite to one another, at the breaking up of the body after death, after dying, arose in a happy born or happy destination, a heavenly world. This monks became to be known as the partridge Brahma faring. So basically, because of respect, the Buddha's story to these monks was because of the way these animals acted, and they not only got a human birth, they went all the way to the Brahma realm just from having a bright heart. So he was trying to teach the benefits of the 5 precepts and the benefits of that heart of reverence and respect and the power of that. So not to overlook the simple things. And then the Buddha said, those who reverence the old, those men are skilled in Dhamma, worthy of praise here and now, and a happy born hereafter. Well then, monks, if animals, breathers, can live courteous, deferential, polite to one another, so do you, monks. Let your light shine forth here, so that you, gone forth in this Dharma and discipline, which are well taught, likewise courteous, deferential, polite to one another. And then we'll jump to sutta. It's a lot of information today. And we have numerical discourse 235. Then the householder Anathapindika approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side, and said to him, who in the world, Bhante, is worthy of offerings, and where is a gift to be given? And then the Buddha said, there are, householder, 2 in the world worthy of offerings, the trainee and the one beyond training. These are the 2 in the world worthy of offerings and a gift to be given to them. This is what the Blessed One said. Having said this, the fortunate one, the teacher, further said this. In this world, the trainee and the one beyond training are worthy of gifts of those practicing charity, upright in body, speech, and mind. They are the field for those practicing charity. What is given to them brings great fruit. Okay, I will just have a pause for a moment, and then if there's any questions, and then, so just relax the body again. Relax the legs, relax onto the seat. Relax and soften the belly. Relax the shoulders and arms. The in-breath and the out-breath. The neck, face, eyes, forehead. And just be with the softness of the breath for a moment. Okay. Well, thank you for my talk today. I may be of insufficient wisdom, so I ask for your forgiveness if I have said anything wrong. And please investigate for yourselves. And if there's any questions, then we will finish up. We have Sayuri from Japan. If one kills somebody or steals something, those actions are caused by his mind, or we need to think of environmental reasons too. Well, thank you for the question. I think the main thing is that we look into our own experiences. So until we have sufficient wisdom to see the cause and effect of actions in our own heart, that's when we can come to ending these things. But I don't think it's possible for us to do this for another person. So as we begin to practice, then we're changing the environmental conditions, we're changing our perceptions, and then ignorance is replaced by wisdom, and then naturally these things will fall away. So I think if somebody... those actions caused by his mind. But yes, the mind is the forerunner of all things. So, So yes, all actions are caused by our minds. And yes, we need to think of the causal factors that lead to those actions. And best, I think, that we just look at our own hearts and not the hearts of others. Okay, thank you. Any questions from here? Okay, we're finishing 4:06. Brilliant. Thank you for coming today. We'll pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha.